Adventist World Radio. From broadcast to baptism. Powered by SID Media.
Well, good evening to you and welcome to the second and final hour of this show. It is a Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media. Tech Tuesday it is, and this is where we explore a little bit around technology and some of the trends that are happening in different industries. And today is no different at all. We're talking about what is food fraud. I must tell you that it's the first time I hear about this thing. Have you heard about it, by the way? So this evening, we want to discuss some key aspects of food fraud, as well as measures that food safety authorities can take in order to stop the persistent problem of food fraud, including, of course, legal interventions combined with the use of technological tools. And our guest this evening, that is Brother Dumelo Shokwe, holds a master's degree in agriculture, you guys, yeah, BTech in food technology, and a higher certificate in total quality management, and is currently pursuing his PhD studies in food science. He is employed as a quality and food safety manager at one of the largest chicken meat manufacturers in South Africa, and also acts as a guest lecturer for quality and food safety management. We've got a big man this evening, and he's on the line joining us. Mhlekazi, good evening, and thank you for your time.
Good evening, Thapelo.
Ah, how are you, sir?
I'm well, thanks. And how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for asking. We really, really appreciate your time. Are you well?
I'm well, thanks. I can't complain.
I'm good. The year started fine.
Yes, yes. With not much issues. We're hoping for a better 2025.
No, definitely. We are hoping for a better one. And as a person who's pursuing their PhD, firstly, we want to wish you the best with your PhD and hope everything comes out well. But also, how do you do it? I find that people who pursue PhDs are like the anomaly in society. Is that true, though?
it depends on how you manage your time.
Okay.
And how you manage your work. So you need to strike a balance between work and studies.
And studies. Is this something that you've always wanted to do?
Yes, 100%.
Oh.
I had to set up my goals, and
yes,
among that, I decided I will keep myself busy with studies, work, and family as well.
Yeah, yeah. So you're one of those that are blessed by God, God's favorite children, because you get to pursue things that you love. I wonder, Luna, you are blessed by God, right? So you guys are living the best. Yeah?
Yes, 100%.
Ah, fantastic, man. I mean, I can read your bio, a very impressive bio, but when people talk to you, how do you tell them who you are? What tickles your fancy? What keeps you up at night?
Yeah, Thapelo, let me first thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, sir, for coming. Yeah.
And greetings to everyone in the studio,
yes,
and the listeners.
Yes.
Look, I am Dumelo Shokwe.
Yeah.
That's how people address me.
Yeah.
And a food technologist,
yeah,
born and bred in Gapane, Tzaneen, in the Limpopo province.
Okay.
And like you have mentioned already, I'm a quality assurance,
yes,
and safety manager.
Yes.
A very humble person.
Okay.
And yeah, I among things that I do is not just to study and work. I also,
yeah,
lead teams.
Yeah.
I also assist students.
Yeah.
So that will be research students.
Yeah.
And also do some guest lecturing,
ah,
especially on what I love the most, which,
yes,
is food safety and quality.
Ah, that's lovely. That's what I'm saying, you are blessed. Now, what got you in this space? What really made you to one day decide and say, this is exactly the industry I want to end up at?
Yeah, look, Thapelo, I grew up as a very curious child.
Yeah.
I wanted to know how things work.
Yeah.
I wanted to understand how things go about.
Yeah.
So, fast forward, in the early 2000,
yeah,
one of my father's friends passed away.
Okay.
And that really raised my eyebrows.
Yeah.
I asked questions around that. I wanted to know, what is it that we did wrong?
Yes.
Is there nothing that,
yes,
we could have done? And I started researching on food safety. And,
yeah,
you can imagine, like, back in the day, we were not privileged, like, with Google. So,
yeah,
it was quite difficult.
Yeah.
I had to look around food safety. And,
yeah,
some aspects were around being a medical doctor. So
yes.
I ended up wishing to become a medical doctor
yes.
and a food scientist.
Yes.
But look, I wanted to be in a space whereby I will be proactive.
Yeah.
Before somebody gets to the hands of the doctor,
yes.
I will have done something to prevent them from being poisoned.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I was doing my career choices,
yeah.
I chose to become a food scientist
ah.
and then started off at the University of Johannesburg.
Yes.
Technologist.
Yeah.
And then luckily, I think by blessing, by God's mm. grace, I got my first job
mm.
as a quality assurance trainee.
Yes.
And the rest is history.
The rest is history.
Quality assurance coordinator and then yeah. now quality assurance and food safety manager.
Ah, lovely, lovely. Ah, man, that's such a beautiful one. So I'm saying your profile really is quite impressive. I've never heard of this thing. When am I good? I'm going to call you a doctor because that's where you're going, PhD. But I've never heard of this thing called food fraud. Please, at a very elementary level, what is this thing? Is it people stealing food?
It entails that, but
okay.
what food fraud is exactly
yeah.
is basically a crime that is linked to either the ingredients that goes into food or the products. So if I go a bit in detail,
yeah.
actually the intentional substitution and addition or even tampering of food so that it can be misinterpreted. So it's also false misleading statements about a food fraud product. So this can be for various reasons,
yes.
including the economic
yes.
gain.
Yes. Yeah. So there are people who are that I suppose, bestowed, let me use that word, because maybe that will sound a little bit too strong. There are people who are as stowed as they're trying to deliberately, like intentionally meddle in this thing.
100%. So there are people who work with food on a daily basis. Mm. Some work in mm. the lab,
mm.
some are in the production lines.
Mm.
These people end up mastering the process to a point that
yes.
they will do something and you will not notice anything.
Yo.
And look, we have technology and science now. I know it's of good, great advantage,
yes.
but it also comes with disadvantages because you can substitute something and still have the same
yes.
results as
yes.
your original product.
Yo. So what informs this? You said economic, but I really want to get into it. For example, if you say economic, because they are working, they've got jobs. So what is it that's more than that, that they really want to benefit from that? And I'm just mentioning the economic one because you made an example with that. But what drives people to be this malicious?
The love of money.
The love of money.
Yeah. And also now looking at the bigger picture, if it's
yeah.
a business, it will be for profit. In some cases I will give you an example
yeah.
with milk.
Yeah.
There's been cases where it was reported that milk was substituted with water, say
mm.
they work on a 20-80% ratio
yes.
To dilute the milk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yo.
It's done most of the times to bulk up the volume.
To bulk up, right. And I suppose in putting water instead of milk, they save a little bit and they can then, instead of it being a 1 liter, it will be 500 milliliters of milk and then water. So they can take the other 5 into another bottle. So it helps them to have more than what it should be, basically.
Yes, 100%.
Oh, I get it. That's why they are so malicious, these people. Okay. Anyone that comes to mind besides the milk one? Do you have an example maybe that comes up? Because now I'm thinking, I'm like, yo, I look at oranges, I'm like, limo, I think there's quite a few that we've seen. But I know the milk one predominantly as well.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I can actually take you through quite a lot
yeah.
because I've been following this a lot since I'm in the industry.
Yes.
So one that comes to my mind now is
yeah.
The incident that occurred in 2013.
Okay.
Whereby some students in the Cape Town were conducting their research, and
yeah.
then among what they were doing, they picked up that 68% of the beef burgers that
Yo.
Were in the market were made of donkey meat.
Yo.
Yeah. So at this, in, during the same year, it was researched further to find out that beef patties that came from the UK also were made of horse meat. So you sometimes eat this food, and if you're not curious to know what goes in the food, you will be surprised if DNA tests are done.
You've just made me to lose my appetite there, because
please don't.
I'm like, my goodness, this thing can easily be done. So people can meddle this thing. What methods are they using to meddle into this? And I suppose then do food fraud. What methods do they use?
So there's quite a number of methods. Maybe I should take you through the types of food fraud that we have. First one, starting with concealment, which is deliberately hiding the low quality of an ingredient into a finished product. That can also happen with a whole finished product.
Yeah.
And it also involves like intellectual property and infringement. So that's how deep this can go, including the illegal use of trademarks and packaging. Whereby somebody make a product identical or very similar to yours. And then another method is counterfeiting, whereby they copy the brand name, the packaging concept, the recipe, processing method, or other aspects of the product for economic gain. So this, in most cases, you will hear me mentioning economic gain, because mostly this is most motivated by money,
by the
financial gain.
Yeah.
And then we also had a method of dilution.
Okay.
I've already given you an example with milk, but this happened also with your 100% juice.
Sure.
And what makes it difficult is that you go to a different country from South Africa, for example, and find that the regulation allows that you can say something is 100%, even though it's 60% of the original fruit and water. So it's quite challenging.
Yeah.
And one other method is the gray market.
Okay.
Whereby food is redirected from its intended destination. For example, you have product that has expired, and somebody decides, let me do some organoleptic test.
Yes.
If they find that the product is still edible, they will process it, change the best before the expiry date to extend the shelf life.
Yeah.
So you have quite a number that includes mislabeling of the product, substitution, and unapproved enhancement.
Without necessarily naming people and shaming them, do you find that this thing is concentrated in certain countries and regions than in others, I suppose, by comparison?
Yeah, look, that's a very good question, but a little bit difficult to answer, because there are many aspects that are looked into, because you find that you are in a developing country, they do food fraud because they're failing to access raw materials that come from far because of different reasons. You will need to have certificates and all this. So people will try to find something that works like that in their region. And then in other areas, you find that people are doing it because they are more much advanced because of technology. And I will give you an example with internet market.
Yeah.
Somebody can go there in order for them to attract the market or the customers. They will put something that's misleading.
Yeah.
So it's actually a complicated one, because you have different views and different aspects from different countries and regions.
So do you find that there's certain countries where this might be allowed because of, like you said, the certain challenges in regulation, or the country itself does not have certain type of natural resources, and so they might need to artificially, mischievously reproduce this thing using technology and give it a certain branding as if this thing is acceptable, but mainly because their natural resource endowment doesn't allow them to do that? Why can't they export this thing instead of frauding stuff?
Because it's expensive. And it's going expensive. Back to your original question, there's no country whereby food fraud is allowed. And I'm saying that because referencing from the likes of the World Health Organization, from the Codex Alimentarius, and FSSC in 2000.
Yes.
There are guidelines on how to mitigate this, and
yeah.
there are guidelines on how to prevent it from happening.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
The import and export requirements, which entitle how to prevent or stay away from food fraud.
So it's not acceptable, but people find ways, I suppose, to still do it because of economic reasons, like you 100%. Said. Hey, maybe that's why the Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil, because people do strange stuff there. Imagine you thinking it's a beef burger and it's a horse meat burger.
Exactly. You can say that again.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's why we should stay away from both vors. I'm not saying people should not eat their vors, but I'm like, one of these vors, because you don't know what's in there. Can be very difficult to even understand that and all that. So what are the challenges or factors that, I suppose, from a detection point of view, are quite steep? What are the challenges in detecting this food fraud?
Firstly, looking at the challenges right now where we are, and if I make reference of South Africa,
yeah.
I think the verification methods, we do not have that technology to verify the methods that are used by the manufacturer. So, for example, if you have to check how much brine was put in chicken, we don't have a reverse method to check how much was injected. So if you have the accessibility is very limited, and also looking at the complexity of the supply chain, you have raw materials coming from abroad, whereby if I'm a quality manager and I want to audit that, it's not easy to do the traveling to go there and review their processes. So there, we still have a little bit of limitations as far as food fraud is concerned.
So there's no way to then trace it back, besides, I suppose, the resources to go back and look at auditing their factory or processes or procedures or whatever, to see that they adhere to certain ISO standards or whatever. But at the point at which you catch it, you can't trace it back.
We are able to trace a product back, but like I said, there are some hidden areas. Like I said earlier on, people end up mastering the processes. However, what the food industry is doing, we have SOPs, we have regulations in place that make this to be so minimal.
And I'm just going to ask this one as a personal one. So if you are a person that deals with this thing and have to check this food quality, ingredients and everything, and you detect that there was something here that's not supposed to be here, are there ethical standards, ethical codes, you know, like you find with doctors and accountants and all that, and lawyers, they have to sign a certain code of conduct and everything? Is there such a thing with people who are checking quality to say, my conscience does not allow me to process this thing and give it a checked and quality stamp, when during my detection I saw that this is horse meat, it's not beef?
Yeah, no, Tapelo, there are. And first the prerequisite is when you come into this, you should know exactly what you want, and you should understand the public health, your impact on the public health. There are ethics that we put in place, to a point that if you see that there's something wrong, in fact, we have systems that are able to detect a problem before it becomes a bigger problem. So in manufacturing, there's quite a lot of regulations that we adhere to.
Sure.
And on a personal level, with the love and passion for what I'm doing, I doubt I will ever be in a place whereby I accept anything to intentionally pass without me.
We thank God for people like you. Out of interest again, is there a case that you can remember of a person who was taken to task simply because they neglected that very, very thing of saying, no, this is not what it's supposed to be, so I'm rejecting this pile?
Look, I have seen, our systems on a daily basis, and I'm talking about the food industry
Yes.
as a whole.
Yes.
It's developed to make sure that you can see the problems at hand. For
Yeah.
example, with theft at work, and I'll give you an example of where I work currently. We have quite a lot of control measures to see all the activities that happening, to a point that you have somebody who's 24/7 looking at the camera. If there are any suspicions, then they will detect that.
Sure. And what kind of factors then make the risk of food fraud just a little bit higher or elevated? What are those factors?
The first one I can think of is the economic factor, like to do with finances and money. So you will see, if you read
Ish.
through internet, you will see that it happens a lot in developing countries. And now that affects people who are in the industry, people who work in processing, and also the ethical factor. To think about it, it's not everyone who's at that level whereby they cannot allow just anything. So hence we need to have those control measures in place.
Ish.
And then something that I mentioned earlier on, it's the supply chain complexity.
Supply
A
chain.
complex and global supply chain includes various stages
Ish.
and places. So sometimes you find that a certain manufacturer cannot access the import and export
Yes.
certificates, or
Yes.
controlling, or even as small as controlling the entire supply chain. It becomes more challenging, with then the transparency becomes even less. So that's why it's easier for people to then miss certain aspects that are important.
What sort of laws then come to your mind that you can remember that apply specifically in South Africa that control food fraud? I just want to know so that I can go and read them myself because this is really scary, the stuff that's happening here. I'm
Okay,
like,
we have FSSC 22,000.
okay.
Then under the FSSC 22,000, there are additional requirements which are specifically on food fraud. So you also have foodstuffs and
Okay.
cosmetics together with Disinfectant
Yeah.
Act. If you go through that, you will see it covers quite a lot. And then the Department of Health under Regulation 638 also gives you guidelines around the food fraud.
Okay. I've written these down. You're saying yasaba manje, it's about everything. I'm like, yo, the stuff that we eat now. Do you ever get to a restaurant and they serve you food and you look at it and you're like, something here looks fishy.
Yeah, look, Tabelo, I've actually become so I'm very
Conscious.
selective when it comes to what I eat.
Yes,
I
yes.
don't eat just anything. I
Eish.
would rather not eat than eating something that I don't trust.
That you
And
don't
not only because
trust.
of food fraud, thinking of food safety,
Yeah.
how was this food prepared, and who handled it, how did they handle it. So yeah, I always look at that.
No, we have to as well. Let's then come to us as ordinary consumers who are not as skilled as you are with not the eye that you look at food as well. So how can we protect ourselves? Is there anything we can look out for, watch out for? Do I look at that steak and say the color doesn't match what I think a steak should look like? Or how do we protect ourselves as consumers?
Yeah, firstly, I think the most important is by reporting any unusual characteristics of the product. Like you said, if you see, actually, you need to know your product. You need to know your food to a point where if you buy a product and it's supposed to be orange, but you see that this color is off, report it to the manufacturer with the batch number, with the production date. They will be able to trace it to see if it really comes from them. And then also avoiding the gray market. And I know this is a little bit difficult, especially in countries like South Africa, whereby you can afford certain things. If you see something that you always wish to have at a lower price, you're almost tempted to get that. But avoiding the gray market, I think that will come a very long way. And also, most importantly, reading the product label before purchasing your food.
Yeah.
So what consumers can look out for is the use by date, the sell by date, the name of the product. And the reason I'm saying the name of the product, you find that you want to buy cool beans and somebody has become smart enough to produce, to make a product that's called Kiwi. They know that not everyone who read their labels.
Yes.
And in products like meat, you should be able to trace the product by looking at the abattoir number, which is used for traceability.
Yeah.
So if you have that abattoir number, it will mean that the slaughterhouse has been registered with the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Health, and it uses reputable suppliers who will not even try to conduct any acts like food.
Sure. I want to go back to the first point that you made, looking at the food and all that. I wonder if this also applies to restaurants, because at a personal level, I just had an episode just recently of what I suspect is food poisoning. And I bought this food at a restaurant that everyone buys from. But obviously, I'm used to buying from this food, from this restaurant and all that. And all of a sudden, give it 1-2 hours after I ate their food, I can tell you it was a pandemonium the entire night. Because I could even tell the way my stomach was reacting. I had nothing else, not even water or anything after I had that food, right? So I ate that. I wonder if that applies to them as well. And how do we even see? Because this thing is a burger. A burger is a burger is a burger is a burger. And it might not necessarily have the quality that it should have because we trust the brand and all that. And now I have unsavory things of running to the bathroom the entire night.
If I make a comment there, there's quite a lot of things to look at, because think about it, a burger consists of lots of ingredients. Think about it, you have flour, you have water, you have a patty that was made from meat, you have a cheese that comes from milk. So you have quite a lot of ingredients. But before we even conclude that it could be food fraud, we also need to look at the food safety aspect, not only at the manufacturer or at the restaurant level, also as a consumer. It matters the time that you buy the product versus the length, the duration of consuming it. Because if you take a burger now, buy it at this time, around 7 in the evening, and then you eat it at 9, it's 2 hours after you've purchased it, and it's not in controlled temperatures. In that process, you may have some of the components going off, and the micro count will be even above the acceptable level. So that could be the cause of the issues that you've had, or the issues that somebody may have. So it's very, very important that as much as the manufacturers implement practices or make sure that they have good manufacturing practices, it's also the consumer's responsibility to go and handle the product the way it should be.
Yeah, they must then write to these restaurants that consume this thing within 1 hour. Or 2 hours, so that, I mean, it's a trusted brand. I think their food goes through those stringent quality control processes. It's an international brand for that matter.
100%. Yeah. But Thapelo, very important for you and everyone else out there, if you experience that. I know they normally say there are two types of consumers or customers. The first one will go and raise a customer complaint, and then the second one will just stop going there. But what if the product has given you has a very adverse impact? You'll see it maybe in 10 years or 20 years. So it's very important that if you experience that, you go and report them.
Yeah.
There is a customer complaint, they will do an investigation and get back to you. If you're not winning, You have your Consumer Protection Act,
that
gives you guidelines on how to report such incidents.
I'm going to go and look at my slip there to make sure that I've got
Please, my ducks in a row.
And they must go and check that food that was done at that particular point in time. Sure.
I'm not a person.
Final words from yourself, final thoughts on this food fraud. I've learned a lot. I'm now skeptical of food. I will eat, don't worry, because I need the body needs the food, but my goodness, I'm going to be very skeptical of what I eat now.
Yeah. Yeah, look, they normally say food can either be your medicine or nourish you. So
yeah,
it's very important that people look at what they eat. Read the product label. And don't just buy anywhere. Look at who's selling the food, look at the conditions around the food. So it's very, very important. And lastly, from my side, I think it's very important for people to report any unusual activities. If you see that there's an old building, there are trucks that normally comes there to collect something, report that. It's very, very important.
Thank you so much, sir. We'll stay in touch, definitely, because this is just the start of this really important topic. We really appreciate your insights and just sharing with us as well. You've opened our eyes, and we pray that the Lord blesses you, and all the best with your PhD.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, sir. Well, that was the elder, of course, Dumela, talking to us this evening about, watch out what's on your food, because it might just be the reason that you find yourself where I found myself, unsavory things.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.